Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello. I wish I got that kind of response every time I was on a video chat with someone.
Listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You are listening to episode 256 of Sapnin Podcast, featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, and I would hope you tell all your friends about this podcast anyway. Yeah. But I think we're a lot like the greatest romance of the 21st century, Sean.
Nope.
Well, we're sold. We're cute without the E. And you know who I do. Fucking,
you are about to be cute without the E next time I see you in the flesh. You absolute bastard. Yes, this week's guest is singer, songwriter, multi-musician, and all-round good egg, the lovely John Nolan of Taking Back Sunday and Astralight Run.
Woo! I mean, what can I say about Taking Back Sunday that I haven't already? They are literally my favorite go-to band, probably the prodigal sons of that emo Long Island scene, and just people I always want to hear stories about. They have a brand new album coming out next week on October the 27th, titled 152, which is a number you've probably seen on quite a lot of this stuff over the years. Very sentimental to them. And we actually had Adam Lazara come on episode 152 of Sapnin Podcast, telling us all about the importance of that number 2 years ago to the podcast date. This is 256.
Wow.
That was 152. Literally 2 years worth of podcasts in between. I hope John's going to give an insight into a little bit more behind that as well. But just honestly, a band that has influenced you and I on so many different levels, musically, aesthetically, inspiration. It's just a band we absolutely adore.
Yes, very much so. It's a band that I even shot a video in the same place as they did in LA once. We shot Save Ourselves and Children of the Night in 20 hours in a warehouse in LA, and then I went to the back of the warehouse and I was like, oh, there's a giant fan there, which just happened to be from the set of Make Damn Sure. But yes, what a fucking band Take Back Sunday are. They do a bit of everything, emo, screamo, straight up rock and roll, grungy in parts, dancey in parts. They've literally done it all in the music, and I am thankful they exist because they have been one of the most influential bands in the scene over the last 20, 25 years.
Honestly, and especially with everyone just loving emo nostalgia at the moment, they're the perfect band for that. We've always admired John. He's been on the podcast before, very, very early on, but we just really appreciate the fact that he's taken the time to do a full episode with us. You know, he's a very shy individual, doesn't, on the surface, doesn't do too many of these, and we can't wait to hopefully dive into a lot of different topics from TBS's different eras, Straylight Run, guitar riffs, melodies, and just some ridiculous memories they have with this legacy on the scene that means a lot to us. But before we go straight into the conversation, just a reminder, if you do enjoy these podcasts and want to support myself and Sean, please head over to patreon.com/sapnin. Not only do you help this thing happen every single week, Not only do you get to meet a community of people that are your best friends in the entire world, but you get to know the guests before anyone else. And this week, we even posted a photo with someone on there that we bumped into in Cardiff walking around and might come on the podcast soon. So, you know, if you love a little bit of gossip and you can't wait to find out, head over to patreon.com/sapnin. Give us a follow at sapninpod on Instagram and the app formerly known as Twitter. But without any further ado, let's get straight into this. This is episode 256 with John Nolan of Taking Back Sunday.
Aye. Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Lovely. Sapnin!
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 Yes! Yes! Our guest this week is singer, songwriter, vocalist, solo artist, multi-instrumentalist, the lovely returning guest, John Nolan of Taking Back Sunday and Stray Light Run. And John Nolan, how are you?
John Nolan. Yeah, I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
No, honestly, it's always a pleasure speaking to you, John. I appreciate you taking the time to do this. I mean, it's a very exciting time. New Taking Back Sunday coming out. A lot of stuff going on. But how are you doing? How's things behind the scenes at the moment? How's things in the Nolan household?
things are good. You know, we've been doing a lot of interviews and things like this, gearing up for the album, and it's been very exciting. And then also, you know, I've been home for a couple of weeks now while doing this. So it's always nice to have a break at home. And then, you know, we're kind of gearing up for being out on the road again in another month or so. So yeah, trying to just take it all in and spend some time with the family and get ready to go out there when the album's out.
Am I right in saying that Adam is actually living down the road from you now for like the last couple of years? Are you like still close neighbors?
We used to live just a block or two from each other. For probably like 6 years or so, we lived in Charlotte, and so did him and his family. And they actually moved for a little bit and then moved back to Charlotte, and we moved to Lawrence, Kansas, probably about 3 years ago. So now I'm in the middle of the country and pretty far away from anybody else in the band. But I'm just waiting on the day when everybody realizes that they need to move to Lawrence, Kansas. And, you know, any day now, I think it's going to happen.
Well, yeah. Well, we would. If Taking Back Sunday called an emergency rehearsal tonight, where would it be?
It would probably end up being on Long Island because we have two band members that are there. It's the only place now where more than one band member lives. So I think kind of ends up being the most sensible place to try to get together.
See, I was trying to set it up to see if, like, when you were living close to each other, if you or Adam would run to each other's house at random times, knowing that you had a melody stuck in your head and trying to write a song very quickly. Like, the worst possible times, just like...
I don't think that ever happened, but it definitely could have. There was also some funny times where even, like, talking about a song that we were working on or something we were recording where we would be talking on the phone, but... literally, I think, like, if we yelled loud enough from our front yards, we could have been talking that way.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say, yeah, we were just talking on the phone while I was looking at him through each other's windows. Oh, yeah.
We did that, too.
Well, Morg, I just realized, yeah, if they lived close together, they'd still probably just phone each other, wouldn't they? Or Zoom exists, as we currently are on.
Yeah, but, you know, trying to make funny stories happen, Sean. Come on.
I've never run out of my house and started screaming for my bandmate. I think I've come up with a melody idea!
You're missing out.
Like, yeah. I know. Yeah, perhaps that's why, yeah. That's probably why my band's not as good as yours. So yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Well, shit.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
John, before we start getting into a lot of things, I mean, you've been in this industry for so long that I feel there's obviously elements that come with it that kind of die off or kind of aren't as fun or kind of aren't as exciting as they used to be. But one thing that's happened to you lately that is very surreal is you got the chance to go out on the field of the Mets and do a throw with your son on that field. I'm sure, coming from a sports guy, that was such a incredible experience to do after all these years, and a nice experience away from the band, but still have your bandmates there.
Yeah. Yeah. That was amazing. Definitely one of the highlights of my experience in any band. And I've gotten to do a few things, Mets related over the years. And anytime I get that, it's like, you know, dream come true type thing for me. I became a Mets fan when I was about 7 years old and have been one ever since. So yeah, to get down on the field and throw a pitch and also to, you know, have my son there, throw a pitch to him, like just, you know, real surreal kind of dreamlike moment.
That's awesome. How did that come about? Did they contact you or does management go, oh, John fucking loves you lot?
Someone at the record label got in touch with someone in the Mets organization, and they set it up. They were able to put the label put together this like promo video that they played on the screen there right before I threw the pitch. And the thing that's also was kind of crazy is the Citi Field where the Mets play recently put in what I think has got to be the biggest video screen in sports. The screen is like literally, you know, takes up the like half the length of the outfield, maybe more, and is almost as high as the top of the stadium. So the screen is gigantic. And we got to see that this like promo video with clips of our music video and the song playing on it. And that was really cool.
Wow.
I love how these little sports emo crossovers happen sometimes. It's just great to see. But no, as we said, like, it's a very exciting time. You know, this new album now, 152, is coming out next week. And this number is so sentimental towards the band. It's kind of like an inside joke that you've let us in on over the years a little bit, but just kind of showcasing it on different covers and backdrops and things like that. We actually had Adam come on the podcast for our 152nd episode, which so happens to be 2 years ago this week, to explain about all, which is a very nice coincidence. But I was wondering if you could open up a little bit on what that number kind of means to you individually and how it relates with this new album.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Adam told his story about the origin of that number. I'm guessing he probably did on episode 152. You know, so that all started with him and his connection back to North Carolina and his friends there. And ever since then, you know, it's been incorporated into the artwork of all the albums and incorporated into merch designs and things like that as well. And so, I mean, I guess, like, to me, over the years, it's kind of become a little bit of like a secret code or something where, you know, it's like if someone's at a certain level of fan of our band, you know, it's something they recognize and can be a little bit of a way for other fans to identify, you know, what level of fandom they're at, you know. And but, you know, it's something that's just been a little more low key, but always there. And we felt like with this album, it was, you know, probably, it was a good time to bring it to the forefront. And, you know, we also had really thought about wanting this album to be a self-titled album. It felt like it would make a lot of sense. It seems like a reintroduction to the band, but we had already done a self-titled album, so that option was off the table. So this seemed like the closest thing to it.
Yeah, it's kind of working out you could do that. Yeah, it'd have to be something like Take It Back Sunday 2, the
yes,
prequel.
We talked about that. But that idea went down pretty quickly. Yeah, Taking Back Sunday 2 just that sounds like a weird wolf to something that nobody even knows.
Take It Back Sunday minus 1. This is the one before the self-titled, honest.
Minus 1. We didn't think of that.
But how cool has it been over the years to kind of see people embrace that number as well? And you said it's kind of like a secret code between you all, but I'm sure having it out more in the public eye now and kind of expressing the origins behind it and why you've kept it in the band and on stuff for so long is nice to see in many ways.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, to have people at the level of, you know, of appreciation and, you know, dedication to the band that we've had for a long time is just a really amazing and kind of mind-boggling thing. And I think the 152 part of it is just like a that's one element of it or representation of it, you know. And and then I think bringing it out, it's making it the name of the album now, I think it'll take it away from being maybe as low key or secret of a thing. But I think it also kind of like brings everybody in on it now. And I think there's something to be said for that as well.
There was a lot of buzz online a couple of months ago when you were kind of filming some music videos around this of footage of you guys playing our backyard show. And that looked absolutely crazy. But me and Sean were having a little discussion off air about this. How hard was that to organize? And how manic actually does those shows kind of get these days?
Well, once we it was a bit hard to organize at first, but originally the idea for the music video was going to be more of recreating a show like that. And at a certain point, we kind of said, well, why don't we actually just do a show like that and film it and make that the music video. And once we knew we wanted to do it for real, we got in touch with a lot of our friends that still live on Long Island and still connected to like the local scene there. And one of our friends, Mike Dubin, actually manages a young band from Long Island and was friends with a guy who puts on backyard shows currently with bands from Long Island. He's in this neighborhood there, but I guess his neighbors are cool with it. And so they'll have shows pretty regularly in his backyard. So once that connection was made, things really fell into place. But I mean, what you see in the video, a lot of the crowd footage was taken from that, like our actual little concert that we played there. We did a few takes of kind of playing the new song and then like a 6 or 7 song set. But, you know, it's as crazy as it looked in the video, if not more so, because there's always the thing too, when people are crowd surfing and moshing like that and in such a small area, people, you know, falling onto the stage, people knocking into microphones, and like, it's kind of just pure chaos in a lot of ways. But that's what our shows were like for the first year or two. Once we really got going, it was just chaos every show, especially on Long Island at the beginning.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of a backyard promoter. Like, you never have that over here in the UK, we can tell you that.
My first thought was, that boy better look out, because Live Nation is coming for him. His back garden's going to be owned by somebody else in no time. Clear Channel are going to take his garden from him. That's mad.
You never know. It is possible. Maybe they can. Maybe they can give him a good money offer. Buy his guard out for a hefty sum.
Yeah, fingers. Oh, show off your garden. Yeah. How crazy would that be? Like, just buying one man's garden off him to stop him from putting shows on in his own town. Like, that was fucking brilliant. It's the way the world's going. I don't doubt that happens soon. Yeah, that's yeah. Because the show looked awesome. It reminded me of the old days when shows kind of were like that. Like, luckily, as we've all kind of got older and matured, I guess, they've calmed slightly. But yeah, seeing those took me back to, shows early 2003 to, it was just wild. It was nuts.
Well, what was pretty interesting is reconnecting a bit with the scene that's there now. We were able to see that, like, those type of shows and that kind of energy is still happening. You know, I think, like, it's really just that, like, people like us have gotten older and, you know, you don't want to do that sort of thing in a show anymore. You know, you want to be able to stand somewhere and have some relative peace around you and, or sitting and watching a show is great. I love that personally. But there's still younger bands and younger fans that are doing the same thing, and that was really cool to see. This kind of like this tradition and this type of show is going strong still.
Was there more than just Taking Back Sunday playing that show? Did like the local other local bands play, or was it just you guys?
No, just us. We did it specifically like for the music video. So a lot of the, a lot of the day was really actually taken up by setting up for it, getting the cameras, lights and things set up. And so there wasn't really much opportunity to kind of like have a full, proper show like you normally would in that situation.
But as you said, I'm sure it flew back so many of those old memories of the early days and just playing in the most random places. And especially, we hear so much tales of that Long Island scene and New Jersey and everything around there at that time. I mean, Tucker from Thursday told us about some of Jeff Rickley's party gigs in the past and stuff. I mean, what comes back about those times in particular? Is there any weird situations of like places you've played and you just kind of like, wow, I can't believe that was a thing back then?
Yeah, I mean, back in the early days, a lot of those shows were being put on by basically kids, so they would find any space where anybody would let them have a show. And so I think like Thursday had a lot of similar experiences. Actually, that reminds me of the first time we played a show with Thursday. It was in this restaurant that they would shut the restaurant down and clear out all the chairs and tables and then set up a stage in there. But they also had like a fountain, a big water fountain, like water feature, but there was like right behind the stage, and there was fake palm trees everywhere. It was like part of the theme of the restaurant. But so all that stuff is up and going still during the show. But Thursday had their stuff set up on there, and it's like a makeshift stage that
is not, you know, the most stable thing, but Thursday's equipment is right behind ours while we're playing. Adam stood up on one of the amps. I forget whose it was. I don't know if it was Steve's or not, but anyway, he's during the show singing and standing on one of the guys from Thursday's amps, and the thing tumbled and fell off the back of the stage. And Adam fell and luckily wasn't hurt, but the amp had fallen probably, you know, it was probably like 4 or 5 feet high of the stage. And we hadn't even really met them yet. We're just playing our first show with them. We knew of them because they were really like breaking out before we were. So yeah, so that was our first introduction to them is Adam stood on one of your amps and then it fell off the stage. And I hope everything's okay and you don't hate us, kind of. And they were nice. They were as nice as they could be about it. And it was still a little while, though, before we actually got to be friends with them. And I'm not sure if that has anything to do with why it took a little while, but it might.
Wow.
Oh, I love stories like this. But as well, it's just the thought of this place being a really fine dining restaurant a couple hours before, and then all these like emo kids coming in and going nuts with a fountain and palm trees. Oh,
yeah,
wild.
I don't know why the restaurant was up for that. I have to think they maybe weren't doing that well if they were willing to like shut their whole restaurant down on like a Sunday night at 6 o'clock in the evening. But who knows?
Unless someone's got a kid, unless the owner's got a kid who likes the bands, I guess, or something like that.
Right,
like,
yeah, well, yeah, some kind of connection.
I've got a big space. You can play my man's restaurant.
Yeah, it's possible. Honestly, that might be.
Just send in Jeff an email. Jeff, I've got a restaurant. Do you want to play?
Take yes or no. Giant fake plastic palm trees everywhere. Yeah. So that's a bonus.
Yeah, literally. But like, talking about those early days, I mean, Taking Back Sunday have had such a connection with a whole generation of music lovers. I mean, just tell your friends on the Soam had such a cult fan base at that time in the early 2000s. And a lot of people have grown up with the music of the band, this live energy and that kind of double tone crossover vocals with a million hooks and melodies that you guys are known for. But like, so much has happened within the last 20 odd years. Is it weird sometimes to see how far things have come? I'm sure like at one moment things feel like forever ago, but at the same time, it feels like just yesterday you were playing restaurants with palm trees.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is one of those things that, I think that probably happens with pretty much everybody. Once you get to a certain age in life, you look back and certain things seem like yesterday and other things seem like 100 years ago. And it's definitely the same with us. And it's very nice at this point to kind of look back on everything in a different way, I think, than it was a little while ago. Like, even as well as the band has done through the years, like, we really had the mentality, I feel like almost up until probably 3 or 4 years ago, that our mentality was that this thing could be over at any minute, and that, you know, any day people could lose interest and we wouldn't be able to keep doing it. And I think that in a certain way kind of is what motivated us and kept us going. And then in another way, I think it was just this sort of insecurity and paranoia or something that we were all holding on to. And so we finally kind of hit a point where we realized that we're okay. And this is going to keep going smoothly, you know, as long as we want it to. And that makes it a little more comfortable to look back and appreciate everything that has happened. You know, it feels a little better and a little different than when you're still in the mindset of like, we just got to keep this going. We got to keep this going because it could end at any minute. It could end any day. We just got to keep it going. Don't let people forget about us.
Yeah. And that's mad to you, really, because coming from someone who's a massive fan of you guys and has been since the first record. Yeah. That's nuts to think that you think that fucking That's mad. And it's good. Do you know what? I think it's going to genuinely help a lot of people listening to this who are like myself in much lesser bands to know that people like yourselves are worried about the same things that us little fuckers are all worried about as well at the same time. So I appreciate that. I really appreciate that.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. The thing is, I don't know. I mean, I think everybody that I know that's a musician has a similar mindset. And I don't really know if it matters, like how big or small your band is. I think that's kind of something that most musicians kind of carry that mindset with them. As far as I know, it's just like, well, cause there is a reality to it. It's, you know, it, like even Taking Back Sunday, when I came back to the band in 2010, it was, things are going great, relatively speaking, but I knew, and like the other guys knew, like looking at the comparison of the amount of people that were at shows at that point versus 3 or 4 years before that, that things were on a downswing. And, you know, there is ups and downs in it, no matter how successful you get. I mean, I think there's very few people who like reach some kind of a peak and then just stay there, and they're just kind of riding out this constant success. I think there's almost always just these ups and downs that you have to ride out. So I think there was a few years there where, well, and I remember even we had friends telling us in like 2012 or 13 that the band was never going to get any bigger than it was at that point, which like commercially speaking was kind of a mid to low point, is, you know, and like, but we didn't feel that way. And we turns out we were right to not feel that way, because things kept going back up, up and up. And, you know, it feels like it hasn't really stopped at that since then. You know, the band feels like it kept growing and getting bigger again. But yeah, people at that point were telling us, yeah, no, this is about it for you guys. You're pretty much, you're just going to ride this out at this level for the rest of your life.
They don't sound like friends to me, John. So if they're listening,
maybe not.
Yeah, no, it is weird. It is weird how people's perspectives and stuff can change so much of those things. But was there a certain moment that you all kind of felt comfortable with how the band is going now in recent years? Was there like a defining factor or anything, or did you just kind of feel comfortable again?
Well, you know, one thing that happened was with having to stop touring and we didn't really even make that much music together during the pandemic. So for like a year and a half-ish, we didn't tour. We didn't play one show. You know, we kept in touch with each other, but we didn't really work on music. We had always worked on music as a group in the same room. So trying to do it through like emails and texts and phone calls just didn't feel right. So we were forced to just stop. And I think for a long time, we figured if we did stop for that long, that would be something that would kind of make people lose interest or forget about us. So I think coming out the other side of that and having everything be still good, as, you know, as far as like the excitement and interest in the band, like, I think that really showed us like, oh, okay, like we're fine. We're okay. Like we're not like, we don't have to keep that mentality that we had and keep like constantly doing things every minute of every year to keep people's attention.
Well, I'm glad you guys have realized that, because yeah, big fan of the latest records in particular, but can't wait for these new songs. But I think for a lot of people looking at Taking Back Sunday as a whole, I think they would probably categorize a lot of different eras within the band. And I mean, obviously you and Sean Cooper left in 03 to do Straight Like Run, and the band having its kind of own lease of life in that time. And I don't want to ask, does it feel like your band again, but did it take time kind of warming up to Taking Back Sunday again when you guys came back? Like, did it feel like you needed to put the TBS hat on, or did it just quickly feel like back where we left off in kind of 02 03?
You know, in a lot of ways it felt surprising how quickly it all came back together and like felt normal, you know. I wouldn't say that it felt like 2003 or that, you know, we necessarily picked up where we left off or something, but as soon as we got into a room to play music together for the first time, everybody clicked automatically. Everyone like felt comfortable. Everyone was just like, in a certain way, it weirdly did feel like not that much time had passed. So I don't know. I think there was something because of the five of us at the start of that band and through that whole year and a half or whatever it was of touring off of Tell All Your Friends, like we went through a really kind of insane experience that nobody else in the world can understand, you know, because you could we could talk to somebody about it and explain things about what it was like, but there was only the five of us that actually experienced it and know what the making of that album, what the, you know, the response to the album and everything that came with it, what that was like. So I think there was some sort of a bond that was just there and was very obvious when we all started playing music again.
Was the muscle memory there on that? Do you remember the first rehearsal back with the band?
Yeah, I mean, fortunately we did. Well, we got together to work on new music before we ever rehearsed any of the old stuff. So that was nice. I mean, like for me, especially because, yeah, I was not really like prepared at all to play. Well, especially all the songs that I had not been a part of writing. I was not prepared to do that at all. So writing new stuff was like, right, was where I was at and where, like, what I was ready for. And once we did get together to play our first shows and I was learning those songs from the second and third album is mostly what I learned. That was really challenging for me. And those first couple of rehearsals were pretty bad. I remember looking at the other guys and they're being kind of like, so did we make a mistake here bringing this guy back here? Like, because, you know, my thing, like I can remember almost anything I've ever made up on a guitar going back to when I was a teenager. I could probably play for you and just had to think about it for a few minutes. And it's not that hard for me. No, even if it's something that's more challenging, it can just come right back. But playing stuff that other people make up is much more challenging for me. So that was probably the biggest hurdle, was having to get used to learning these parts and things that I hadn't made up, and it definitely made me much better at playing the guitar. So that was good. But
good. Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad some positive came from that then. Cause yeah, I was worried that you were going to go, well, at first I was like, should we just do Tell All Your Friends and this new stuff we've done and then just ignore.
Well, if it was up to me, that's what we would have done. I knew that wasn't going to happen though.
But when you look at it now, I mean, you and Sean have been in this band and being on more records than you haven't. And I'm sure that's it's funny how, yeah, how time is can pass on those stuff as well. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's nice that you can be at a place now as well where those other songs are second nature to you and you can all just celebrate what the band has been in the past and still going forward with these new songs and just kind of enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Is there anything with these new songs in particular, or just recent years in terms of guitar playing or songwriting, that you've tried differently or really come to fruition that maybe you wouldn't have done in the early days?
Well, with the new album, we really ended up taking a different approach to things. Like our songwriting process was the same, and you know, we spent a long time just with the four of us just writing and demoing. And then when we finally found our producer, Tushar Apti, who produced the album, we met him through doing a song with Steve Aoki a couple years ago. And he was producing and engineering that song. And he's younger than us and kind of comes from a pop music world, but he's also like an amazing musician. So he had this whole different mindset, and his way of working on songs was totally different. So I think that was the biggest thing is, you know, a lot of what happened was the stuff we had worked on and demoed and wrote, we would bring into the studio with him, and he would kind of take it and rearrange it, like, all within, you know, his recording program, and like bring these new ideas to what we had already done. And even, you know, kind of like the way he would sometimes edit parts and like, and structure and things like that. There was just like a whole new element that he brought to what we did, I think, because of his background. So, you know, I think that was that's the biggest thing. I think if you hear the new songs and the new record, it's like very clearly Taking Back Sunday, but then in another way, there's something like completely different about it as compared to everything else. And I think he was a big part of that.
Nice. Did he have any strange recording techniques? Because I know a lot of producers have different things that they like to do or whatever. Did he have any ones that you were like, what? I'm not headbutting that tambourine in a hallway. What?
I think, well, one of the things that was strangest to us, you know, because of like him not coming from the pop or from not the rock world, like, you know, like I said, like every, like almost everything he would do would be within the computer. And so a lot of times we'd just be sitting in the room and listening while he's trying out different sounds. Like he might bring like this synth sound into a part, and, or like, you know, that song Amphetamine Smiles that we put out, we're just kind of listening to him rearrange the song, and like the acoustic guitar that's at the beginning, the whole first verse was just a layer in the song at one point. And I think like drums and a bunch of other instruments were there for the whole first verse of the song. And then gradually he's kind of just stripping stuff away, and it gets down to what you hear now. But there was a lot of times like that where, you know, we're just kind of sitting in the room and like listening to where he's taking it. And that was a new experience, you know, like, cause usually if we're rearranging something like that, we're just, it's like the producer, like, okay, go in and try it this way. And then you all go in and try to play it a certain way and see, oh, does that work or does it not work? And here we're just kind of sitting and listening in real time as he just is like, this is a whole new, here's a whole new approach to this song. What do you think? And we're like,
yeah,
holy shit, that's amazing.
Was anybody butthurt by that at all? Is anybody like, I wrote that part specifically to be there?
Nah, I don't think so. I think, you know, we're all big boys, you know, we've all learned through the years that it's in the songwriting and recording process, you got to let things go. It really helps if everybody trusts the producer, which they did in this case. I think in the past, the only time that would happen is if someone just, they are attached to a part, but it's not that they can't let it go. It's that they don't trust necessarily that it's the right move to take the part out. You know, it's like, but as long as everyone knows it's going to be serving the song and making the song better, I think, you know, for the most part, no one gets too worried about any of their ideas being cut.
Yeah. And I guess if he's doing it all on a computer, he can literally show you almost instantly what he means, rather than go,
yeah,
you guys go in there and try that. And you're like, oh, that's not going to fucking work. Don't listen to him, boys. What does he know? His friend throws cakes. His friend's literal, his onstage persona is a cake thrower. So yeah. But yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, while we're talking about songwriting, one thing about the band I've always wanted to ask is, especially in the early days when you were kind of setting the foundations of, like, you know, the DNA of what the band was going to be and all this, I've talked about all these stupid over-the-top melody hooks on top of vocals, on top of hooks, on top of vocals. Was there ever a point when you were writing like a bridge or a second chorus at the end of a song and you were going, this bit's a bit too good to put just randomly in the middle of this. Maybe we should save this for a different song. Or was it just like, no, this is, we're full of ideas. This is really cool. Let's keep it going. Because that's one thing I think people have always admired about the band is that, like, you've got a chorus, but any other bit of the song could probably be a chorus as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's something we've always liked and always kind of aspired to. And I mean, I would say, like, as long as the chorus feels really, really good, then anything that comes, even if it just happens once, that might be also really good or, at, you know, on par with the chorus, I feel like that then it's just adding to the quality of the song. And I love in any type of music when you hear a chorus and you figure, okay, well, that's the chorus, and then it's followed up by something that's even more memorable and more exciting, and you're like, oh my god, now this is the real chorus, I guess. And, or even when it's like a part that doesn't happen until the last minute of the song, when you think you've heard everything that you're going to hear, and it's not going to really change much, and then they'll introduce some new thing that's really exciting and awesome. Like, I think that's just the type of thing that we've always wanted to make happen with our songs. So, you know, I think we always shoot for that, and I think we hopefully have done it. I think, you know, we don't always hit the mark, but we're shooting for that level of excitement in our songs.
You've hit the mark so well with that it spawned probably a million terrible bands who can't do it. So
they try it. Yeah. They try it.
I'll give it a bash. It's not going to be as good.
A perfect example for that for me is the last chorus in You Got Me, because that always makes me even more hyped than the rest of the song, even though it's really catchy in a weird way. But John, as we start to wind down on this conversation a little bit, I really appreciate you opening up about so much. But we'd like to just have a little chat about Straight Like Run, if that's all right with you as well, because I feel that was such an interesting project to do, especially with Sean and, you know, and your sister as well, and it being so active within those years. It's hard to juggle multiple bands at the same time, but is there any like thoughts of trying to do something again? You did something in 2021. There's always been like weird question marks on hiatus and that kind of stuff. Or is it just kind of like a family thing? Whenever you feel like you could do it, maybe you'll do it.
It's definitely more like that. Like that, whenever we feel like we could do it, then we will. You know, we did those shows around Taking Back Sunday's holiday shows. I think we did four shows with Taking Back Sunday. So, you know, Straight Like Run played a 40-minute set, I think, before the Taking Back Sunday set. But one thing, you know, there's just like logistically so many things that go into that. One of the reasons we could do those shows so easily was that we basically borrowed all of Taking Back Sunday's crew and equipment and, you know, had everything we needed in place without having to organize it separately ourselves, you know. So there's a lot of things like that where it's like, you know, to go on a tour as Straight Like Run, it's not just a matter of like everybody getting together and rehearsing. It's like you've got to reorganize the entire infrastructure of the band. You know, you need to get crew, you need to get some way to travel around, and you need to, you know, there's just a whole lot of things that have to get to come together. And, you know, really then with the way that Taking Back Sunday has been going ever since we got back into writing for this record, there just really has not been the time to like, for me to put that much energy and focus into doing something else. So, and I definitely know that too. I don't want to ever do anything Straight Like Run related as kind of like an afterthought or like a half-assed kind of let's just try this real quick and see if we could do it. You know, if we do anything, I want to be able to do it right. So far there hasn't really been any time that seems like it makes sense for me, at least.
Do you have any outstanding Straight Like Run memories that come to mind when just kind of looking back at those days in particular? Because I feel like maybe it doesn't get showcased enough, and I'd just like to know some of your kind of like favorite little tidbits from that time.
Well, one thing that was kind of that I just thought of that was weird is this was the first time we ever played Stray Lord played in the UK, possibly before our first album was out. And that was the first time I had ever played a show in the UK, because Taking Back Sunday hadn't had a chance to go there yet. And so all of my first experience, a lot of my first experiences traveling and playing outside of the US were with Stray Light Run. And so that was like, that was always a, that's an interesting thing, like looking back, because as much as Taking Back Sunday toured, we pretty much did just like the US and Canada. We got to, we went to Canada a bit, but you know, Canada's sort of just like, barely feels like going to another country if you're from here. It's, you know, sort of like,
yeah, it's the Wales to it's the Wales to England, it's the Scotland to England. Yeah, it's just them. Yeah,
next door.
That's what I say when Americans say to me, "Oh, where are you from?" And I go, "Wales," and they're like, "Oh, in England." I'm like, "Yeah, like you're Canadian or Mexican," and then they go, "I'm not," and they're like, "Yeah, well, shut up, yeah, different country," but yeah.
Yeah, it took me a little while to figure out, you know, that Wales and England was not the same place. Ooh. And, you know, I think by the maybe second or third tour I was on, I figured it out, but it may be longer than it should have for me.
I love the idea of you finding out the hard way and going, Cardiff, England, and then everybody just boos forever in a lovely sung, almost like singing style, like the Welsh do.
Yeah, that would be nice. yeah.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, Stray Light Run got to do a lot of pretty crazy things as far as where we played a festival in South Korea. You know, like,
what?
We did, yeah, a couple of Australian tours, and like all of that stuff was the first time for all of us. So, you know, that there's definitely something about that. You know, it's like, it's always fun to go back to any other country, but that first time that you go there as a band is always like, just like amazing. And you feel like so excited and nervous, and you don't know what's going on half the time. And it's just like a totally different experience than when you've been doing it for a while and go back to the places. And, you know, you're kind of like, okay, I know, I understand what's going on here now.
Yeah. Wow. Your career has just been one hell of a journey. I'm really glad that you could share some stories and stuff of that with us. So thank you, John. Before you go, obviously, you know, new album 152 coming out next week. Is there any other thoughts or anything in particular from this record you'd like people to really hone in on or look out for when they're listening?
I would like them to look out for and hone in on how good it is. I think that would be ideal.
Yeah, that's true.
It's really good. So look out for that while you're listening. Look for all the things that are good about it.
Look out for how good it is. That's fucking brilliant. Yeah, like someone's listening going, yeah, it's all right. And you go, yeah, but have you listened to how good it is? And they've gone,
but yeah.
Oh, well, now you've mentioned it. It's fucking unbelievable.
You might have to pay attention a little bit, but it is really good once you pay attention.
Oh, so, great, yeah.
That's just one thing I want people to know. And I mean, I can't believe that it's coming out next week. It's still like a little bit surreal. We've been working on the album, you know, since we started writing it was probably almost 2 years ago. So the path from the first writing session to it coming out next week, it's just hard to believe it's all happening.
Yeah, well, here we are.
One last question, I guess. Do you so are you pronouncing it, are the band pronouncing it as 152 or 152 or 152? Because some people are obviously, like Blink, are gonna fuck this up.
I've been saying 152, but I don't know what that's based off of. It's not, there's not really like a correct way to say it, which I think has been kind of a problem, because whenever we answer the question, it's sort of like this, where it's kind of like, I think 152. So we're not really like making anybody sure about it. A fan did point out to us though that, we in like 2011 or 12 we had these jackets that we sold with the Taking Back Sunday. There was a panther on the back of the jacket, and it said Taking Back Sunday. And then it said, written out in words, 1-5-2. So they kind of pointed to that as the correct pronunciation. And maybe that is, maybe that was what was making me say it like that. I didn't really know why I said 1-5-2, but that's what I've been saying. But I'd say, you know, whatever you want to say. I think 1-5-2 is quicker to say. People usually like to shorten things. So I don't know. We should maybe go with that.
This is why I want the band's perspective, so I can act like a snob when someone goes, oh, it's actually 152. And I'm like, well, I think if I find John Olin said it's 152. So
I would, if I was you, I would just correct anybody no matter which way they say it.
Yeah. We're the wrong one. Actually, yeah. I think you'll find John Nolan said he was 15-2.
Yeah. 152.
Oh, well, there we are.
Half of 300. Yeah, it's actually half of 304. What? You're going too far with it.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Thank you so much, John. Really appreciate your time. So excited for this new music and can't wait for you guys to come back over to the UK at some point as well.
Thanks. Yeah. Next year, I'm sure we will be there. It's going to happen. Thanks for having me back.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Sapping Podcast! Yes! Woo! That was the lovely, lovely John Nolan of Taking Back Sunday and A Stray Light Run.
Yes, absolutely means the world that we got to have this conversation. And, you know, it's just a band I can never get enough of live. I can't wait for them to come back to the UK. And this new album, 1-5-2, it seems like it's a very special place for the guys writing music again. And it's just lovely to see, after all these years, a band who has had so much influence on a whole generation of music lovers and other artists and everything is still going strong and still putting out killer singles, killer tracks, and just loving life.
Yes, and playing fantastic shows in back gardens as well. What an event that was. I saw it go online. I was like, oh, I want to do something like that, which just shows they're still influential to this very day.
Right. How hard do you think it would be to book a backyard show for the Blackout? Because you've got to bear in mind, people's back gardens in the UK aren't as nice as they are in the States, really. Unless there's like a mansion you can play
at. Well, that's it, isn't it? Yeah. Unless you're a multimillionaire or your parents are Tories, you're not going to have a big garden big enough for you. But if organising the five shows of the Blackout have coming up in February is anything to go by, it would be nigh on impossible to do a backyard gig. Because every day I'm getting more costs and more absolute rubbish that I need to do so me and my five friends can play five gigs in the UK. It's mental. It's costing a fucking absolute fortune. Just want to play some shows with my friends. Mad. You'd think it'd be Book five venues, turn up at five venues, play the fucking five venues.
Yeah.
No, man. It's much more work. And yeah, I've got to give away money now to insurance companies on the off chance that all our gear gets stolen. From where? The bus we're sleeping on. Will you hear it? Where? The venue that's locked up and has security all around it, is it? What's the fucking point? Anyway, yes, I will try and I'll look into a backyard show.
I was just going to say, you know, with all the Spotify money coming in,
tell me about it. The £46 I got paid a week ago, right, by PRS, it's gone straight back into the band, right? We're all living like kings. It's fucking mental. Unbelievable.
Go and see the Blackout. Play the UK in February 2024. Tickets available now.
Yeah, do you know what? I will say, please come and see the Blackout in February, because it might be the only chance you get to see us. Not because we don't want to play more shows, just because I'm organising the shows and I don't want to have to go through all of the things I'm currently going through just to play five shows with my friends in February. So please come to that one, because if you do, it might make it worth me deciding to book more. But otherwise, I might not fucking bother, because as much as I've begged for the Blackout for 8 years,
yeah,
I also didn't want to take on three or four full-time jobs just to fucking play the gigs as well. So please come along in February, theblackoutband.com for tickets.
It's nice, isn't it, when the singer and has to deal with being the manager of the band as well, I guess.
Not the booking agent, yeah, the social media manager.
Yeah.
I was tour manager for a little bit until I employed someone to do that. I'm the accountant. I'm the agency.
It's fucking
brilliant. It's absolutely fucking brilliant. So
music industry, it's great.
Just want to play some shows with my friends. Why the fuck do I have to do all this stuff?
We had some good laughs in between to get your stress out with the podcast, I guess. Who knows? I thought about this the other day, right? I think in these outros now, I think we should introduce a new section. I haven't told you this. This is live recording, first time a new section we might do if it sounds good enough. Spotify let you leave comments on podcasts if you've enjoyed them and stuff lately.
Yeah.
And obviously, we love people to leave reviews on Apple podcasts and stuff as well. So I was thinking, if people ask good enough questions or leave interesting enough comments on Spotify and Apple, maybe we'll read them out. Maybe we'll talk about them and discuss them in the outros of these podcasts going forward. Yes. But they've got to be good. You can't be smarky. You can't try and make us say silly words, because the patrons do that anyway. So, if you've got anything you think of, head to the comment bit of Spotify, the review section of Apple Podcasts, and we'll see what happens.
Yes, do that, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, just get us more engagement on stuff. Please retweet if you see us, or re-X, or whatever it's fucking called. Do that if you see our posts, please. We need to get out to as many people as possible. Especially if you're not supporting our Patreon, you must at least retweet and like every post you see by us. Because you are getting this shit for free, you robbing, absolutely robbing, thieving bastards. Like, you don't do our music enough. Anyway, if you go to patreon.com/champening, there's loads of different tiers there for you to choose from. You can go as little as £1, I believe. I might be wrong, I might have made that up. But check it out, patreon.com/champening. If you go to the description of this episode, wherever you listen to podcasts, you will see a whole load of absolutely wonderful names of Patreons. But these are the top tiers. Thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwoe, Janelle Kastan, Paul Hirschfield, Tony Michael, Dilly Grimwood, Kelly Irwin, Scarlett Charlton, Natasha Morris, Emma Barber, Mitch Perry, Nathan Crosher, Nathan White, Amy Louise, Alexandra Pemblinton, Kat Besson, Molly Malloy and James Bowerbank, Jonathan Gutierrez, Jerry Robson, Murray Grimwood, Scott Jones, Amy Dawson, Stuart McNaught, Ellen Southfield, Stephen Aston, Caroline Robson, Kate Puttack, Martina McManus, Louis Cook, Carl Pendlebury, Danny Eaton, James McNaught, Jenny Munster, Jason Aredia, John and Emma, Emma Evans-Roberts, Craig Harris, Evan, Sean Foynes, Vicky, Emily Perry, Adam King of the Goth Parslow, who's currently out on tour with Kids in Glass Houses, hope that went well, Kalila Keane, Ollie Amesby, Josh gave this girl a drink of lemonade last night and she completely fell in love with me. I swept her off her feet. Because he didn't have enough characters to finish that. Thank you very much, Kyle David Smith, and last by no means, Connor Lewins and family. Thank you very much to all of those people there.
I prefer a Sprite anyway. But yes, we love our Patreon with every single fiber of our heart. The hearts are fiber.
Being.
I've merged two sayings there, haven't I? But if you follow us on social media at Sapling Pods, you've probably noticed me and the podcast account posting about loads of gigs we've been at to lately. I went to see Funeral for a Friend in Cardiff. I went to see Blink-182 in London. And this week I'm seeing Kids in Glass Houses in London. And the amount of Patreons getting involved and meeting up at these things and different gigs all around the country, in different countries all around the world, is absolutely fantastic. So get involved with it. It's honestly a wonderful community that we can't say enough good things about. Patreon.com/Sapning. We appreciate them. We appreciate you for listening. And we'll be back next week and every Friday with another special guest, some laughs and chaos in between. Who knows?
Yes, fingers crossed. Sapling quality.
You're listening to Sapling Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.